Okay, by way of review, remember that last time we started a new section in the book of Acts, and that was in chapter 11, verse 19. And this section in the book of Acts is going to shift the scene of activities from Jerusalem up to Antioch. And chapter 12 will be kind of a parenthesis in that, and it'll go back to Jerusalem, and we'll start that tonight. But then chapter 13 is going to pick up again with activities at Antioch and activities in the Gentile church. Now, we'll be talking about the Gentile church, and remember that Antioch was what you might call the first Gentile church. It was established, you'll recall, based on personal witnesses. It was a little bit different than what we've been looking at up to now. Up to now, we've been looking at the apostles defending themselves, the apostles being told exactly what to do by God, and now we have people just going out and proclaiming the gospel. Remember in verse 19 through 21 of chapter 11, we looked at the founding of the church, and we noted that the church there was founded by unknown Christians. It wasn't the apostles who set out to found a church there. It wasn't, we don't even know who it was. In fact, in verse 19, well, look at verse 20. It says, "But there were some of them, men of Cyprus and Cyrene, who came to Antioch and began speaking to the Greeks, also preaching the Lord Jesus. And the hand of the Lord was with them, and a large number who believed turned to the Lord." It's not specific. It's just this group of people. There is no evangelistic plan in place at this time. So the church was founded there. The church grew, we noted, through the end of the chapter, first through the ministry of Barnabas in verse 22 through 24. In verse 23, for example, it says, "Then when he arrived and witnessed the grace of God, he rejoiced and began to encourage them all with resolute heart to remain true to the Lord." So Barnabas, we looked at last time, a very ideal person for the job of going up to exhort the church at Antioch. And then we noted that the church grew also through the ministry of Saul, who later becomes the Apostle Paul in verse 25 and 26. We noted the activities of the early church. In verse 24, it said at the end of the verse, "And considerable numbers were brought to the Lord." And in verse 25, what did they do with them? It says, reading on, "Then he left for Tarsus to look for Saul, and when he found him, he brought him to Antioch, and for an entire year they met with the church and taught considerable numbers, and the disciples were first called Christians in Antioch." So they were adding to the church, and they were systematically teaching them. Now, we note again that the term Christians is first used at Antioch. It was applied to them because they were the people who were always talking about Christ, always doing things relating to Christ. And it was a somewhat dangerous term, we noted last week, because as Christians, they were no longer part of Judaism, and they were no longer considered just a sect of Judaism. And while that doesn't mean a whole lot to us, it did to them, because Judaism was protected under Roman law. It was a religio licita. That means it was a protected religion, but Christianity was not. So the term Christians was first used there, and we're going to note as we go through Acts that they'll continue to use that name for themselves, even though it's not. It's going to be somewhat dangerous, and we'll see that tonight as Herod breaks into the picture in chapter 12. They also grew up at Antioch through the ministry of Agabus in verse 27 through 30, and he, remember, predicted a famine, and the believers up at Antioch then took up a collection for the saints in Judea, and they sent it with the team of Barnabas and Saul. So they were the famine relief team, if you want to call them that. And about this same time now, we're going to see back to Jerusalem, and chapter 12 will give us a kind of parenthesis in the story of Antioch. We're looking at Antioch, now we go back to Jerusalem, and chapter 12 breaks down into two parts. First, we're going to have the delivery of Peter in chapter 12, verse 1 through 19, and then the death of Herod Agrippa in verse 20 through 23. So we see these two sections, and both of these sections are going to focus on God is still protecting the church in Jerusalem. He's going to protect it by getting Peter out of prison and avoiding certain death, and then he's going to help the church by getting rid of Herod Agrippa. And then in verse 24, chapter 12, when we get down to verse 24, we'll have another summary statement. And when we see this summary statement, it means we're going to be starting a new section again. And verse 24 says, But the word of the Lord continued to grow and to be multiplied. And then in chapter 13, verse 1, notice we're back up at Antioch again. 13 says, Now there were at Antioch, in the church that was there, prophets and teachers, Barnabas and Simeon, and so on and so forth. So we'll be going back to Antioch. But now chapter 12, we'll first be looking at Peter's deliverance, and I paused there because the verses on that last one are wrong. I don't know what my trouble was with the slides this time. It outlines this way. First, we'll have a historical introduction to this section that will deal with Herod, and this is Herod Agrippa we'll be talking about, the grandson of Herod the Great. Peter's deliverance, his escape from prison in verse 6 through 10, and then his reaction to that in verse 11 and 12, and then we'll have the rest of the believers' reaction in verse 13 through 17, and their reaction is going to be somewhat humorous as we look at that. It's going to be what you might call biblical humor. And then Herod's reaction in verse 18 and 19. So you can change your slide there. The Herod's reaction will be in verse 18 and 19. First, let's look at the historical introduction to this section in verse 1 through 5. Let's read those verses. Starting at chapter 12, verse 1, it says, Now about that time, Herod the king laid hands on some who belonged to the church in order to mistreat them. And he had James, the brother of John, put to death with a sword. When he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded to arrest Peter also. Now it was during the days of unleavened bread. When he had seized him, he put him in prison, delivering him to four squads of soldiers to guard him, intending after the Passover to bring him out before the people. So Peter was kept in prison, but prayer for him was being made fervently by the church to God. So first, by way of historical introduction, Herod, in verse 1, Herod the king, as he's called here, is Herod Agrippa the First. He's the grandson of Herod the Great. Remember, Herod the Great was the one who had the children put to death when Jesus was born. This is his grandson, Herod Agrippa. His father, Aristobulus, was Herod Agrippa's father, was executed in 7 BC. And at that time, Herod was sent to Rome with his mother. His mother's name was Bernice. Now, Herod Agrippa was a notorious playboy. He was one who liked the good times. So by 23 AD, he had spent the entire family fortune. And in fact, he was so far in debt that he had to leave Rome to get away from his creditors. Now, this is the kind of guy we're talking about here, this Herod Agrippa. In 41 AD, Herod lucked out. When Emperor Caligula died, and he was succeeded by Claudius. Now, Claudius was a close personal friend of Herod Agrippa. I mean, they grew up together. They were children friends and grew up together. So Claudius, being his friend, did a good deed for Herod. And what he did was he kind of redivvied up the Roman Empire, especially the part around Jerusalem, and he gave Herod Agrippa the same territories that his grandfather had, Herod the Great. So he actually expanded Herod Agrippa's territory, and he gave him the title king. Now, Herod Agrippa ruled over this territory from 41 to 44 when he died. So this is the time period we're talking about. It's very easy to date this section of the book of Acts because everywhere you look, we have things that can be dated. Now Herod, an important thing to note about Herod Agrippa was that he was greatly influenced by Judaism. He was, especially when he was down in Jerusalem, he was what you might call a Jewish wannabe. He wanted to be a Jew. And now when he was in Rome, he was a different kind of character. So I assume a lot of this was maybe phony, but I don't know that. He was greatly influenced anyway. The Gemara, and the Gemara is a Jewish commentary, has this to say about Herod Agrippa. It says, the king is guided by the queen, and the queen is guided by Gamaliel. You know, Gamaliel was a Jewish teacher. So the idea is that Herod was very much associated with Judaism. And in fact, the Mishnah is a book of Jewish traditions, has this to say. It says, when they reached the Temple Mount, even Agrippa the king would take his basket on his shoulder and enter as far as the temple court. So when they took the first fruits in, remember when we looked at first fruits in 1 Corinthians, and we noted that the first fruits were brought in to the temple when the crop was ready. They harvested the first sheaf of grain and they'd bring it into the temple to show that the harvest was ready. Well, Herod Agrippa brought his along with him. He could go into the court. He couldn't go into the inner temple, of course, but he put his basket on his shoulder and entered as far as the temple court. Now look back at Deuteronomy 17, and we'll look at another quote from the Mishnah. And this one has to do with Deuteronomy verse 17. And the section there is in verse 14 through 20, but the verse we want to deal with is verse 15, because this is what it says about Herod. When he was reading this section, or when he would read this section, verse 14 says, when you enter the land which the Lord your God gives you, and you possess it and live in it, and you say, I will set a king over me like all the nations who are around me. You shall surely set a king over you whom the Lord your God chooses. One from among your countrymen you shall set as king over yourselves. You may not put a foreigner over yourselves who is not your countryman. Now listen to what it says about Herod in verse 15. It says, when Herod was reading this, when he got to verse 15, his eyes flowed with tears because he couldn't be their king because he was an outsider, you know, technically. And but they called back to him, our brother art thou, three times. So he was greatly influenced by Judaism. He very much wanted to be on the good side of the Jews. Now this isn't really surprising if you step back a minute and think about his job. As king over a Roman territory, one of his primary functions was to keep peace in his territory. Remember, they had what they called the Pax Romana, the Peace of Rome, that was enforced by the Roman military. And they called it the Pax Romana because if anybody started to kick up a fuss, they'd just march the Roman army to their borders and everybody'd settle down right away because it was absolutely invincible. It's kind of like a strategic deterrent force, I guess you could call them. But that was his job, to keep the peace in his territory. Now, Herod did this by always supporting the majority and suppressing the minority. That's how he kept peace. He would support the majority. Now, he regarded the Christians then as a minority and the Jews as the majority. So therefore, to Herod, Christians were a threat to the peace of his territory. So he was very much in favor of traditional Judaism and against Christianity. Now that was why he had James and Peter arrested, because he thought they were a threat to the peace of his territory. And you know, Rome wouldn't smile on things if he didn't keep peace in his territory. That was his job. So with all this in as background, if you look at chapter 12, verse 2, you can see why Herod did this. It wasn't just an arbitrary act. Verse 2 said, and he had James, the brother of John, put to death with a sword. So he had James beheaded. Now, James, remember, was one of the original disciples. And this, he's the first one to be martyred. Philip was martyred, but remember, Philip wasn't one of the original disciples. James is the first one to be martyred. And I think here that when we read verse 3, it kind of gives the impression that Herod was not quite sure what the reaction of the Jews was going to be to this. Because remember that at this time in Jerusalem, the Christians, the Christians were Jewish Christians, they were still attending temple service. They were still practicing Judaism. So Herod didn't know how this was going to go over, but he had James beheaded, James the brother of John. And in verse 3, we can see that it was successful. Verse 3 says, when he saw that it pleased the Jews, remember, that's who he wanted to please because they were the majority. So he kind of, you know, had James executed and see how that went over. Well, when it pleased the Jews, he went out and arrested Peter too. Wow, you know, my job is to keep the peace. And he did so by pleasing the majority, which was the Jews, and killing Christians pleased the Jews. So what are you going to do? So he goes out to kill some more Christians. And that's his idea when he arrested Peter. Well, now he had to put Peter in jail because he had to hold him until after the Passover. He knew he couldn't hold trial during the Passover. That would not go well with the Jews at all. So what he wanted to do was have Peter executed after the Passover. So he's set to execute Peter after the Passover, and he puts him in jail. Verse 4 is kind of interesting. It says, when he had seized him, he put him in prison, delivering him to four squads of soldiers to guard him, intending after the Passover to bring him out before the people. Now the normal guard for a prisoner was one soldier. And here he put Peter in prison under a guard of four squads, and a squad is four soldiers. So he apparently wanted him guarded very well. Now what did the church do when they saw this? Verse 5, so Peter was kept in the prison and kept very well, being guarded by a much larger contingent of guards than was normal. Peter was kept in the prison, but prayer for him was being made fervently by the church to God. So the church prayed for him. Luke points out that the response of the church was prayer. And that's going to set the context now for what follows. We're going to find that prayer is going to be answered. And this historical account is going to be set by the spiritual setting of prayerful Christians. So let's look at his deliverance now in verse 6 through 10. Peter's deliverance, let's read those verses starting at verse 6. It says, on the very night when Herod was about to bring him forward, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and guards in front of the door were watching over the prison. And behold, an angel of the Lord suddenly appeared, and a light shone in the cell. And he struck Peter's side and woke him up, saying, get up quickly. And his chains fell off his hands. And the angel said to him, gird yourself and put on your sandals. And he did so. And he said to him, wrap your cloak around you and follow me. And he went out and continued to follow, and he did not know what was being done by the angel was real, but thought he was seeing a vision. When they had passed the first and second guard, they came to the iron gate that leads into the city, which opened for them by itself. And they went out and went along one street, and immediately the angel departed from him. So we see Peter again being delivered from prison by an angel of the Lord. Now remember, Peter was being guarded here by a super group, or a super reinforced group of guards, not the normal method for guarding prisoners. Now maybe Herod had heard, remember back in Acts chapter 5, look back in chapter 5, remember when we were back there, we saw the apostles were supernaturally released from prison before. And maybe Herod heard about that and he thought, you know, this Peter, he broke out of prison one time. I'm going to really guard him carefully. In verse 17 of chapter 5, it says, "But the high priest rose up along with all his associates, that is the sect of the Sadducees, and they were filled with jealousy. They laid hands on the apostles and put them in a public jail. But during the night, an angel of the Lord opened the gates of the prison, and taking them out, he said, 'Go, stand and speak to the people in the temple the whole message of this life.'" So the apostles had been, or had broken out from Herod's standpoint of prison before. Maybe that's why he had him guarded so well. It doesn't really say in the context. Maybe God prompted him to do it because he wanted to show how supernatural this escape actually was. And we see that term, we've seen it in Acts chapter 5 and now in chapter 12 as well, the angel of the Lord. Now when you see that, and especially in the book of Acts, but when you see that little phrase, it generally is used to represent God, or the activity of God in the affairs of men. In other words, God is coming into the affairs of men and acting there himself. Now the reason when you see that phrase is usually one of two. Either God is going to deliver somebody, and we just saw that in Acts chapter 5, didn't we? They put the apostles in jail. What happened? The angel of the Lord, the apostles got out of jail. Or you see that in the context of instruction as well. And we saw that in Acts chapter 8. Remember in Acts chapter 8, and look back at verse 26 of Acts chapter 8. The story of Philip, remember when he was going to the Ethiopian eunuch? Here we have the angel of the Lord instructing Philip exactly what to do. Verse 26 says, "But an angel of the Lord spoke to Philip, saying, 'Get up and go south to the road that descends from Jerusalem to Gaza.'" So he is instructing Philip on what to do. Now here in chapter 12, we see the same phrase, the angel of the Lord. And now we're going to have him get Peter out of prison. He's going to deliver Peter. Now, some people say that this was an inside job and that Peter escaped from prison by himself, or he bribed the guards, something like that. I think that that's pretty much hard to defend, especially if you look at verse 19, look back down at chapter 12, verse 19, the guards knew what the penalty for letting a prisoner escape was, and they suffered that penalty. In verse 19, it says, "When Herod had searched for him and had not found him, he examined the guards and ordered that they be led away to execution." So I don't think the guards would have been bribeable, really. I mean, how much is your life worth? And all of them would have had to have been bribed. And in fact, if we go back to verse 5, the only effort that they expended was in prayer. They didn't try to break Peter out of prison. He didn't try to break out. He did nothing to obtain his release. And in fact, on the night before he was to be executed, what? He was sleeping. He was sleeping soundly. The angel had to hit him to wake him up. Now, I couldn't identify with that. I have a hard time sleeping on good days, let alone the night before your execution. Here he is sacked out when the angel shows up. So all they did was pray. And another thing to notice about these guys praying, and this is, I don't know, I find it kind of humorous, they're not exactly what you would call full of faith kind of guys. Look down at verse 13. These guys that were praying weren't what you would call giants of faith. Verse 13, when Peter gets out, it says, when he knocked at the door of the gate, a servant girl named Rhoda came to answer. When she recognized Peter's voice, because of her joy, she did not open the gate, but ran in and announced that Peter was standing in front of the gate. And there's the biblical humor. You know, here's Peter knocking at the door, and the girl who comes to answer the door doesn't even let him in. She turns around and runs back inside, yelling that Peter's there. Well, what is the response of these giants of the faith who have been praying for Peter's deliverance? Verse 15, they said to her, you're out of your mind. But she kept insisting that it was so. They kept saying, it is his angel. But Peter continued knocking, and when they had opened the door, they saw him and were amazed. So their prayer was answered. And what did they say about it? You're crazy. That couldn't happen. So keep that in mind. If when you read verse 5, you know, you think of these giant faithful men who would were the very pillars of faith. They didn't even believe their prayer was answered when it was. Now in verse 9, we get down to verse 9. It's at verse 6, it says, on the very night when Herod was about to bring him forward, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains. Guards in front of the door were watching over the prison. And behold, an angel of the Lord suddenly appeared, and a light shone in the cell, and he struck Peter's side and woke him up, saying, get up quickly. And his chains fell off his hands. And the angel said to him, gird yourself and put on your sandals. And he did so. And he said to him, wrap your cloak around you and follow me. And he went out and continued to follow. And he did not know what was being done by the angel was real, but thought he was seeing a vision. So at this stage, Peter is just following the angel of the Lord. And he's kind of like a zombie or in a trance. He's just following. He doesn't really know what's going on around him. He thinks it's a vision. And then in verse 10, it says, when they had passed the first and second guard, they came to an iron gate that leads to the city, which opened for them by itself. I guess they had automatic doors back then. I don't think they did. That was supernatural. The door was being opened by itself. The words by itself are kind of fun. Automatos. We get the word automatic from it. That's why I said automatic doors, because automatos is the Greek word behind that opening by itself, or as Bauer Arndt and Gingrich lexicon says, without visible cause. So the gates open up automatically by themselves. Now what's Peter's reaction to this? Now Peter finds himself out on the street now, and he's alone. In verse 11, when Peter came to himself, and remember, he was kind of in a daze or like a zombie, and now he comes to himself and he's standing in the street. He came to himself, he said, now I know for sure that the Lord has sent forth his angel and rescued me from the hand of Herod and from all that the Jewish people were expecting. So now he sees the hand of God in the rescue, and he sees that it's real. It's a real rescue. Now, some say the angel of the Lord was a person, and really the word angel doesn't tell you whether it was a person or a supernatural being, because the word angel, angelos, simply means messenger. But I take it that it was a supernatural being, because in verse 7, it said that in the end of the verse, his chains fell off his hands. So as a person, he would have had to have keys to the chains, and it doesn't say he opened them, it says they fell off. in verse 10, the gate opens by itself. I take it here that the person or the being that came to rescue Peter was supernatural. And like I say, some say it was a man because some people don't like supernatural things. It makes them nervous. So I'd say it was an angel in the sense we think. Either way, if you take it either way, the escape itself was supernatural. There's no question about that. I mean, he got by this super guard and walked out, so to speak. Now, the first thing Peter does here is he brings news of his escape down to his friends. He goes to Mary's house. In verse 12, it says, "And when he realized this, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, who was also called Mark, where many were gathered together and were praying." So he goes down. He's probably has two priorities here. One, he's going to tell his friends what happened, and two, he's going to kind of keep a low profile because they'll be after him. So he goes down to tell what happened, and then we have the reaction in verse 13 to 17, and that's the one I said was kind of humorous, because when Rhoda answers the door and sees that it's Peter, she turns around and runs away and to go tell everybody because she's so happy. Verse 13 says, "When he knocked at the door of the gate, a servant girl named Rhoda came to answer. When she recognized Peter's voice, because of her joy, she did not open the gate, but ran in and announced that Peter was standing in front of the gate. They said to her, 'You are out of your mind,' but she kept insisting that it was so. They kept saying, 'It is his angel.' But Peter continued knocking, and when they had opened the door, they saw him and were amazed. But motioning to them with his hand to be silent, he described to them how the Lord had led him out of the prison. And he said, 'Report these things to James and the brethren.' Then he left and went to another place." So first reaction is excitement. And that's where we get the biblical humor in verse 14 when Rhoda answered the door and turns around and runs away. Now imagine the confusion. She's running around screaming, "Peter's at the door, Peter's at the door." And the rest of the ones, they're all in there, "Don't bother me, I'm praying for Peter to be released," you know. And that's kind of the picture you get. And so there's confusion, there's disbelief. They don't even believe it. They refuse to believe that their prayers had been answered. And they accused Rhoda of being out of her mind instead. So when they opened the door and saw Peter, they were amazed that their prayers had been answered. So Peter gives his report. He tells them to go report these things to James and the brethren, and then he leaves and goes to another place. So he went underground. Nobody really knows where, but he appears again throughout the text of Acts, but he won't be the main focus anymore. Now we're going to turn to Antioch, and we're going to turn to Saul, or the Apostle Paul. Now, verse 18 and 19, we have Herod's reaction to all of this, and it's not humorous at all. Verse 18 says, "Now when day came, there was no small disturbance among the soldiers as to what could have become of Peter. When Herod had searched for him and had not found him, he examined the guards and ordered that they be led away to execution. Then he went down from Judea to Caesarea and was spending time there." So Herod's reaction first, in verse 18, everybody was disturbed. It says, "Now when day came, there was no small disturbance." And the word translated disturbed means a state of mental agitation. Now, this is quite understandable. I think I would be agitated too if I was a guard in charge of a prisoner and I went in the morning and he was gone. Because according to the Code of Justinian, it says that the soldier who let a prisoner escape was subject to the same penalty that the prisoner was going to have. So they were going to kill Peter. So what happens to the guards? They get the same penalty as we see in verse 19. So Herod concludes that it must have been an inside job. They must have been bribed or something. So he examined the guards, ordered that they be led away to execution. And really, from Herod's viewpoint, there's no other explanation, is there? I mean, if you don't believe in divine intervention, that must have been what happened. Because there wasn't, you know, the guards weren't laying dead. They were still there at their post. Peter was just gone. This verse, I think, argues against the earthquake theory, which is another theory of how Peter got out of prison, that there was an earthquake and he slipped out in the excitement. Thing is, if there's a reasonable explanation for Peter's escape, why was everybody so confused in verse 18? I mean, if there was an earthquake, would you wait till morning to check the cells? I don't think so. I mean, they would have went down and checked right away to see what was going on. Why was Herod so upset with the guards if there was a logical explanation? There's no logical explanation. It was supernatural. So Herod had the guards killed. And next time, down at verse 20, and on through the end of the chapter, we'll look at the death of Herod. And this is going to be the second thing that God does to preserve the church in Jerusalem. And next time we'll pick up then with verse 20. Father, thank you again for your word. Thank you for this section in your inspired church history, the book of Acts. Father, thank you for preserving your church so that we can come together here as Gentiles and be members of your church and be saved. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.